Well, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic. And I got to say that I've been around the program for 20 years, so I don't have 20 continuous years. And this is the first time I've been roped into doing this. So please bear with me. I'm a little nervous. And I thought I'd just jump in. I tried to write it out, you know, and it just got ridiculous. I tried to, like, frame it and make it fancy and make it whatever. I don't know. So the first time I had a drink as an adult, I mean, I can remember sneaking sips as a kid, but I was 17, and it was at a party for the class ahead of me, a graduation party for the class ahead of me. And I thought it was great. It was amazing. You know, prior to that, I had been a really quiet, straight-laced, straight-A, uptight kind of kid. I was a little too bright for my own good. I had real trouble relating to people my own age. I came from what was a very happy and loving family. But around the age of 12, my dad started to drink alcoholically. And that made my sense of isolation really bad. You know, we had this kind of perfect facade, but we were very white upper middle class, and we didn't talk about some things outside the house. And so I had this crazy reality going on at home, and then this facade going on outside, and it wasn't good. So when I drank that first time, it was amazing. I mean, I felt relaxed. I could relate to the other people. I thought I was funny. Kind of the best thing I can remember from that night is that I was literally sitting up in an apple tree, holding court with all my friends kind of in trees beneath, in branches beneath me, and just making them laugh so hard that a couple of them actually fell out of the tree. And I do hold that memory close, because that was the one good thing that happened that night, because I also had a blackout. Pissed a lot of people off. Got violently ill. All of which should have told me that maybe this wasn't for me. Because I've learned later that, you know, blackouts, ordinary people, non-alcoholic people, tend not to have them. They just pass out. Anyway, so that was kind of a warning sign. So that was the beginning of summer of 84. By the end of that summer, I was smoking and snorting a lot of what my friends back home call outside issues. Since this is an AA meeting, we'll try to keep it at that level. But, I mean, outside issues are a big part of my story. And I'm sorry if that... But that's the way it is. And, you know, just hear what you can hear, take what you want, and leave the rest, because it's going to be part of my story. So by the time of my senior graduation, my own senior banquet, I thought it was a good idea to drop acid and drink. Made for an entertaining evening for all. And so I did a lot of that over that summer, a lot of psychedelics. And then I went to college, and I went to a very good, high standards, very high academic standards, very relaxed social atmosphere kind of school. Private college that liked to think they were still in the 60s. And there were no grades. It was all the honor system kind of thing. You know, you could take your test in your room, and you could, I mean, all this kind of stuff. And I noticed real quickly that and as a freshman, you had to live in the dorms for that first year, which I thought was terrible. But it turned out that just a couple of doors down, one of my neighbors was a drug dealer. And there was literally a line down the hallway once a week when he would get stuff in. And that was completely normal. That was completely accepted. Everybody knew about it. It was fine. And I thought that was great, too. And strangely enough, I managed to stay there for 2 years before I flunked out, which was a pretty humbling experience. You know, I had a pretty high opinion of my own intelligence. I was always I wasn't athletic, I wasn't musical, I wasn't anything like that. I was academically gifted. The written word was easy for me. And so when that came along, that was a real hard time for me. But I spent the next probably 10 years trying to get back there, all the while drinking and using. Somehow it didn't work. I went from there to private college, to the university, the state university system. I went from there to community college. I went back to the university system, back to community college, all the while getting more and more manipulative with other people's money. I took my parents for everything they were worth. I had no shame. I had no problem crying in front of financial aid officers or the dean of students or, you know, having a crisis there in the office. And it worked. I was good, apparently. It worked for many years. People would give me money to continue this downward spiral. So, but it was definitely a downward spiral. And at the age of 23, I was kind of between schools, and I was living with my parents because they were kind enough to let me do that, and helping take care of my grandmother, who I was very close to, and getting myself all ready to go back to university. When my grandma passed away and she died in my arms, and that was very traumatic. My drinking picked up after that. And when I moved back to Portland, a lot of people know where Portland is anymore, but that's where my behaviors tended to happen, and our idea of a big city in Oregon. I started to just relive that, those 13 hours, every time I closed my eyes. That's all I could deal with. I had no way of dealing with, well, life, basically. And so as your normal person does, I had friends who, while I was away from Portland, who had started using IV drugs. So as you do when you have problems, I started injecting heroin because it seemed reasonable at the time. Of course, I was drunk that night. I fell on a needle, and it was no big deal. You know, I have to say honestly, that first time was no big deal. Second time was no big deal. Third time was no big deal. Finally, it got to be a big deal, and. That's a big part of my story. I spent the next 5 years doing that. And it went from being every now and then, to the weekends, to every day. All the time I'm drinking. Of course I'm drinking. You know, that's the constant throughout my story, is alcohol. I mentioned the other just because it seems to make things go faster. And it was dangerous, and it brought me into a world of criminality that I had no idea about before. When everything you do is geared towards an illegal act like that, it gave me a kind of contempt for society and for the rules that didn't apply to me and for other people's belongings and money and... anything you had and I needed was mine. And it just got pretty bleak. And when I think about what it was like, because that's what we're talking about, what it was lonely. That's what it was like for me. When I drank, it wasn't fun anymore. When I shot up, it wasn't fun. It was necessary. Kind of the good times had gone out the window, and it was just getting by. Every now and again, you know, there'd be a kind of a bright moment of, ooh, I'm really high now. Isn't that great? But it didn't last for very long. And my world just got smaller and smaller and smaller. I had less and less communication with the family that I loved. Some of the friends that I did have from high school are from my childhood, they hung in there as long as they could, you know. And some of them are my friends today, thanks to this program. But there were some pretty dark times in there where my only friends were my using buddies. And that's pretty cutthroat business when those are your best friends. When they would get you to use just so they could use. When I did the same thing to them, encourage them to use so that I could do the same. Not a great time. So, what happened? That's what it was like. Everybody knows what it was like, really. It was miserable. It was hell. That's what it was like. And so, when I was 29, I had lost, I kind of pulled myself together, and I had this great job, and probably the best job I've ever had, with a really wonderful family-owned business, and they really loved me. I was the golden boy. I could do no wrong. I was still relatively young, and I just fitted right into what they needed. And, of course, I kept nodding off at my computer, and they gave me a vehicle. I drank and drove in their vehicle, you know, that kind of thing. Shot up in their bathroom, and they had to let me go. Mysteriously, my best friend from childhood kind of appears out of nowhere and is looking for a roommate in Portland. I think, Portland? And he had no idea what had been going on with me in the intervening years. No clue whatsoever. So we get a house together, and the plan is that I'm going to start working, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. Well, that's not what happened. I was living on my unemployment check, and I knew to the day when the last one would come. You know, because you do. And when that day came, and I did nothing. I did nothing to look for work. I did nothing to do anything like that, to take care of myself. Nothing. I took no responsibility for my actions at all. And when that money ran out, what I did was I emptied the house when he was at work. And did what I could with that stuff. And then basically I lived out of my car on the street for the next several months. Basically I was on the street, but I had a safe. I could lock the doors and a dry place to be, which in Oregon is a big deal. And somehow I just managed to be strung out or drunk or well, if I had a good day, for several months. No contact with my family, no contact with my friends, no contact with anyone. And, so that's what that was like. And one day I was going to sell the last thing I had, besides the car, because I was singing, I could hawk the car, you know, or whatever, but which was my leather jacket. I'd held onto this leather jacket for years. I don't know why, but I just managed to hold onto it. And I thought, okay, I can get $40 out of this. I can whatever with that. And it was a Sunday morning, and I was walking up to the place I was going to sell it at, and they were closed until later in the afternoon. Damn it. So I'm walking around downtown Portland, and it's not really that glamorous a city. I don't care what they show on TV. It is not, especially then. It may be different now, but not a lot to do. I was walking by this building, and I hear my name, and this woman is coming out of the building, and it's this gal, Christina, who used to be my dealer. But she's coming out of an AA meeting. She had cut all of us out of her life maybe a year and a half prior to that when she got sober for her little girl. And I hadn't really seen her since then. She came up to me. She wouldn't let me go. She's like, do you have any idea how your family has been looking for you? They have gone through us. They've gone through Warren, my evil twin drug buddy. They've threatened to put people in jail. They've contacted drug dealers. They've been on the street. I'm like, yeah, you know. So she sits me down, and of course, because she's coming out of an AA meeting, she buys me a cup of coffee and gives me a cigarette, and she won't let me go, and she looks me in the eyes, and she says to me, and it's just real simple, she goes, you do realize you have a problem, don't you? And those few words changed my life. I don't know why, and I don't know why her, at that time, I heard what she said, and it was like all the walls just collapsed. I had this kind of epiphany moment. I saw what my life was like, what I had done, what I was doing, the effects it was having on people, and I was disgusted. The word that comes to mind is pathetic. That's how I felt. That is just pathetic. And I had this real clear, I won't say vision, but I had this real clear image that I needed to go jump off the Burnside Bridge right then, or something different. I had no idea what that was. I really had no idea. And this is where it gets a little weird, because I either had a spiritual experience or a psychotic experience. I've never been sure which. I mean, the light got real intense, and I had this overwhelming feeling of presence. Now, I had no belief or experience in anything prior to that. And and there was this overwhelming feeling of presence and power and complete impersonality. There was nothing, it wasn't warm, it wasn't loving, it wasn't cold, it wasn't anything, it was just powerful. And I knew I had the choice between jumping off that bridge and asking for help. And I looked at Christina and I said, please help me. And she took me back to her place and got me well, which she took a lot of shit for, but is what worked for us, what worked for me. Got me in contact with my family. The only member of my family I could speak to at that point was my younger sister. I just couldn't face anyone else. And she came and got me in a hotel room, stayed with me until the next morning, and I went into Hooper detox the next morning, April Fool's Day, 1996. And that was my first sobriety date. And you think that after an experience like that, where I became absolutely convicted of the presence of a higher power, I have never felt alone since that moment. I have chosen to go back out and drink for circumstances, under circumstances that we'll talk about, but I have never gone back to that feeling of misery and isolation and despair in quite the same way. So I tend to think that what happened to me was real. Could have been a real psychosis, but I, you know, that's fine with me. As long as it stays with me, I'm nothing but grateful. So I was on a huge, huge pink cloud. I'd had this great spiritual event, and they finally encouraged me. I went into treatment. They encouraged me to go to AA. Finally, they were like, you have to go to AA. Leave us. And I started doing that, but, you know, the idea of doing any work was completely foreign to me. The idea of, I could read the steps, I could read the book. I mean, it's just words on paper. I could do anything with that, you know, it's my thing. And, but the idea of doing any work, I didn't need to do that because God had spoken to me personally. You know, he put his finger on my heart, and I believed that. So after a year, I thought, well, I can go back up to Portland again. I can go out with Warren, and it's the 4th of July, and I can have a drink. So I drank. Within a week, I fell on that needle again. So there goes the next 3 months, before I have to come crawling home in shame with the realization that that didn't work anymore. And that's been 20 years since I've touched that. And that's not what we're about here, but that's something that's important to me. So I got myself cleaned up, and I got a sponsor, and I kind of did the steps. I kind of half-assed the steps, you know? And particularly skipping over somewhere from 3 to 6. I really ignored 4 and 5. That was the area that, for me, was a real issue. And, so I got another year. And then I ended up drinking again. And nothing else, just drinking. Oh, I forgot to mention that back when after I started drinking as a teen, I started having these depressive episodes, what was later diagnosed as major depression. And they got really, really bad. And when I started drinking again in my 20s, I guess I'm in my 30s by now. When I was in my 30s when I started drinking again, it was really bad. And I started to have psychotic symptoms slightly, you know, just very slightly. Couldn't sleep. Didn't really have hallucinations, but it was a little weird. My thinking was not straight. And I found myself one night at an AA meeting, thank God, where I had nowhere else to go. You know, I was driving around knowing that I needed the emergency room. I mean, I needed it. I was losing my mind. And they took care of me. They saved my life that night. And I'm very grateful for that. So after I'd kind of gotten together again, I thought, okay, I can do this. I've seen it work for other people. I know it works in my life when I do it. So I got a sponsor, and I did the steps. There was still something about 4 and 5, but, you know, I got 5 years of what I consider even today to be good recovery. I got a job, I went to work for the state, I was trusted and respected, and, you know, people looked at me, and if they ever found out where I had been in my past, they're like, you don't look like a junkie. Oh, thank you very much. So anyway, there started to be more depressive periods. I was on medication. I was sober, but I kind of plateaued with my sponsor and had made no effort to seek out the problem. I just waited for someone else to take care of it. That was the story of my life. Someone else will rescue me. Somebody will do it for me if I suffer enough. I hung there on that cross very obviously for people, waiting for someone to come along. And so after 5 years, I exhausted my family medical leave, which takes some effort, and they had to let me go from the state, which really takes some effort in Oregon. I mean, you have to really work at it to get let go as a state employee. And I loaded up my car with a case of liquor. I drove about 30 miles to a small town outside of Salem. I got myself a hotel room, and I decided I was going to drink myself to death. Very romantic notion. Luckily for me, it's not that easy. At least it wasn't for me, you know. I was too healthy, damn it. You know, it just didn't work. And not only that, it didn't give me any relief. The alcohol didn't work anymore. And all this time I've got AA bullshit running in my head, you know. So after about a week, I go, well, fuck this. You know, it's not working. I might as well go home. And I went home and I got myself a psychiatrist and another one. And essentially, I worked the fourth and fifth step with him. I got outside help when I couldn't do it with people in AA. I don't know why that worked for me. But somehow this guy was able to match all my bullshit in a kind and compassionate way that I could hear. He was able to see through all my lies. He was able to present me with the truth about my behavior in a way that I could accept, in a way that I could hear. And one day, this is going to get weird again, but one day we're sitting there and I'm talking to him and he's really pressing me. You know, there's always been something about me that felt not right. Something that was not right about me. And he just backed me into a corner. For years I remembered exactly how the conversation went, but now I can't. And finally I heard this voice say, I'm ashamed of being gay. Who the hell said that? You know, it wasn't the fact of being gay. I knew that about myself. I didn't know I was ashamed. I had no idea. And I had another one of those epiphany moments, that had shaped every single aspect of my life. Every decision I'd made, every relationship I had with my friends, with my family, with everything. We talk about causes and conditions. That was getting down to the root causes and conditions. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I had been pretty militant about not being ashamed. And all that was bullshit. It was just so much pride. So I'm in there in the office with him. And he was a very smart man, very smart man. I have this moment and I can't believe it. You know, I'm just, wow, that's my whole life right there, just a few words. And that's why I drink, you know? And he switched subjects. So we go back to my baby sister, who the only one who I could talk to when I was at my bottom. She had just had a little girl, my first niece. And I love my little sister. And she was living out in Kentucky, and I was in Oregon. So I'd never seen this child. And that's something I talked about with my therapist, my psychiatrist quite a bit, that it was really hard on me, that this experience was happening and I was missing all of it. And so he got me talking about the kid, my niece, and how much I love my little sister, and how much I love this little child, and how I never wanted anything bad to happen to her, and how she could never do anything, even though I never met her, that could affect that love. And he looked at me and said, what exactly is the difference between you and that child? And I didn't have an answer. And here's where it gets weird. The lights got really bright. If you've ever taken LSD, it's that feeling when it's just starting to kick in and you're starting to go, you know something's happening. It was a lot like that. The lights got bright, the colors got intense, I felt lightheaded, and there was that overwhelming feeling of presence again. But it wasn't impersonal. It was very personal to me. And the feeling I got was like the feeling I had for my niece, times 1,000. It was an overwhelming experience of love. for me individually, with all my quirks and faults and everything. And I was healed right there. That was it. I've been sober ever since. What I did after that was get myself a real sponsor and really did the steps again. Honestly, to the best of my ability. Because I knew that despite whatever experience I had, which I believe was real, psychosis or not, it certainly has a real effect in my life. And that I have to do something to make it continue. You know, I have a lot of great ideas in my head, but to make them reality, I have to take action. And that's probably one of the most important things I've learned here in AA. I have to grow up and not wait for these things to just happen to me. So what's it like now? That's the thing. What's it like now? It's pretty good, actually. It's a lot like life, really. Let's see, what has happened? Around the age of 40, I was finally diagnosed. I had my first manic episode, which is quite an experience, rather unusual to wait that long, but quite an experience to have at 40 and sober. I was up for days, and it was amazing, and I felt wonderful, and then I started to hear voices. And I was finally diagnosed as bipolar, type 2, so I don't really usually have the manic. I tend to get the depressive, but when I do get manic, I have hallucinations. And I hear things. I hear voices. And because I was in the program, because I was able to be honest with people about what was going on inside my head, I got the help I needed. That's what it's like now. My disease is well treated. I'm very lucky the medications work for me. I'm very lucky. And so I have those doctors, but I only have them because of you guys. If I hadn't learned here how to be honest, God knows what would have happened. Let's see, what else has happened? I've had jobs and lost jobs. Or left jobs. I don't know that I've gotten fired in sobriety this time. No, I don't think so. I did have to leave a job, a pretty good job. I went back to school and got a degree from a community college, which would have been, who cares, but it's a pretty big deal for me. And got a job in the field, and everything was good, and my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And so I left that job voluntarily to take care of my dad. And I was able to do that because of AA. And dad's battle with cancer lasted for 8 years. And I was able to be there. And I was able to let it be about him and not about me. Most of the time. I didn't have to have explosions about how I was feeling. I didn't have to do a lot of things. I was able to be a support and a help to him and my mother. And that means more to anything. Means more to me than anything in the world. I was finally able to be a good son. And I could not say that before. And when the when the time came for Dad, I just happened to be the only one that was... I was in the emergency room with him. And I was the one who got the opportunity to make the call. Stop. Stop working on him. Let him go. And my family trusted me with that. Direct result of this program. There was never any hesitation in my mind what the right decision was, thanks to this program. There's never been a word of anything but support and love for me for making that decision, for my family, to come from where I came from, and to have that, I can't ever thank you guys enough. And now, what's it really like now? Now it's good. You know, my mother, after a couple of years alone, decided she wanted to move out here to be near my sister and the grandkids. And she came to me and said, "Would you move with me?" Well, you know, I didn't love my job that much in Oregon, and I had a really close-knit group of AA friends and those friends who had stuck with me from high school that I had earned back, but I didn't have a relationship going that would keep me there. I said, why not? So here I am, you know. That's about it, really. I know I'm supposed to stretch this out for another 5 minutes, but... Oh, I guess the other big thing that's happened to me in recovery and what it's like is I have had a long-term serious relationship, and it worked. It was functional as opposed to dysfunctional. And and that was completely new to me. You know, that was something that I never imagined for myself, that I didn't know how to do. Thank God I had some pretty good real recovery under my belt at that point, because when I got in that situation, kind of everything I knew about how to behave went out the window. And I had to learn it all over again. I had to practice the steps really hard. And they worked. I guess that's the message. The steps work. By the grace of God, I'm here. And I'm not alone. And I believe, and this is just my belief, that none of us are. There is no difference between my niece, that beautiful baby that I'd never met, and any of you people. Everybody was like that once. And if you were like that once, you're like that forever, in some sense. So that's what keeps me going. Thank you.